The documentary film behind the bullet deepens awareness of untold stories from the U.S. gunfire epidemic. Director Heidi Heumann will be in attendance and answer questions after the film. There will then be a soul box procession into Multnomah Village. Again, that's Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival, Friday, October 4th through Sunday, October 6th at FUBON and the Orchids of 82nd Community Space in Portland. The third annual East Portland Arts and Literary Festival features live performances, interactive creative activities, a book and craft fair, and a full family-friendly lineup of artists and cultural workers of color. Again, that's the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival, Friday, October 4th through Sunday, October 6th at FUBON, 2850 Southeast 82nd Avenue, and at Orchids of 82nd Community Space, 8118 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information about specific events, times, and location can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Time to fight the empire. Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Pierre Fogring. Teresa Mitchell is on vacation, and I think she'll be back on the 15th, so I am filling in for her. So we're sort of combining Fight the Empire. We're doing a little press watching at the same time because they are part of the same battle, since most of the mainstream media is kind of in cahoots with the Empire. You keep an eye on them, and anyway... Well, right now the big story in the media is the impeachment, possible impeachment of Donald Trump, which I am all in favor of. But if it was up to me, I would impeach Trump for what I think are two great crimes. He, for one thing, he dumped the nuclear agreement with Iran purely out of personal spite against Barack Obama. You know, he's got this personal grudge against Obama, and he feels he has to undo anything that Obama did that was any good at all. And one of those was this nuclear agreement with Iran, which kind of resolved or kind of put a lid on the hostilities in the Middle East. So Trump, he just dumped this treaty, and... It's already led to warfare in the Middle East. The drone attack on the oil installations in Saudi Arabia, and this can all be laid to Trump's dumping of that treaty. The other thing he dumped was the Paris Climate Agreement. I guess Trump. As far as he's concerned, the climate change is a hoax, and he's not going to have anything to do with fighting it. If the oceans kind of flood Mar-a-Lago, it might change his mind. But by then, it'll probably be too late, if it's not too late already. But dumping these two agreements are having dire consequences. You know, with the war and the collapse of civilization at stake. But instead of going after that, the House Democrats, in their drive to impeach Trump, have chosen the legalities of Trump's dealings with Ukraine. And so one of the questions is, did President Trump threaten Ukraine with no military aid if they didn't, quote unquote, investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter? And that is one of the things that they are trying to bring, elucidate and resolve. Question I would ask is military aid of any kind a good thing? And I say no. You look at the military aid that the U.S. has provided to countries around the world, it's not a good thing. It should never have been installed in the first place. And so the military aid to Ukraine is a bad thing. It's definitely aimed at putting pressure on Russia, which we might get into later on. And so, they should dump it. And if Trump threatened, we'll find out about that. The other question is there something to investigate with Joe Biden and his son, their dealings in the Ukraine? People will draw their own conclusions. What happened was that Hunter Biden was given a very lucrative position on the board of a Ukrainian gas company, which we'll get into that first. Let's the media accounts are kind of like they're like coming into the middle of a movie. You walk into this movie and you sit down and the action has already started about half an hour ago. So you're trying to make sense out of what you see on the screen. And so what they're showing on the screen now is Joe Biden and his son coming to Ukraine 2 months after the U.S. helped overthrow an elected president named Viktor Yanukovych. And he was overthrown. He kind of fled for his life, and a new government was installed, which is still in power. Most of the media accounts don't mention that that Yanukovych was elected. They focus on him being a corrupt politician, which is probably true, and they focus on him being supposedly pro-Russian, which may or may not be true, depending on how you mean that. But actually, the real story begins earlier than just after this overthrow. You could start this story back in April of 2011. And Ukraine's economy was in really bad shape. And they were hoping for a $1.5 billion loan from the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. And this loan had some strings attached that Ukraine would not get the loan unless they did a little bit of austerity on the population, like pension cuts and other things. So that was a deal that the IMF and the European Union presented to Ukraine. You want to be bailed out, you got to squeeze your population a little bit more. That was in 2011. In November of 2013, President Yanukovych got a better deal from Russia. Russia offered $15 billion loan where they would buy Ukrainian bonds. And Russia also offered discounts on the natural gas that they were selling to Ukraine. So this was pretty obviously, at least Yanukovych thought that this was a better deal, not only for himself, but just for the people of Ukraine. But protests began immediately in the streets of Kiev. There were actually plans to destabilize the government of Ukraine. Just a month later, in December of 2013, Victoria Nuland, she gave a talk to some big business types. She's the Assistant Secretary of State under Hillary Clinton. And she said that the quite an admission when you think about it, that the U.S., and she called it, invested $5 billion and 5 years' work in Ukraine. And you have to wonder, you know, we talk a lot about meddling in other countries and things like that. Well, if that's not meddling, I don't know what is. The U.S. over 5 years has invested $5 billion in getting its way in Ukraine. That was December 2013. Just a month later, in January of 2014, Victoria Nuland went to Kiev to push for a new government, that get Yanukovych out of there and put in a new government. She was on the streets of Kiev, handing out cookies to all these rioters. And the rioters were deaths in the streets. There were some shadowy snipers who were operating from the rooftops or from nearby office buildings. But when Victoria Nuland was in Kiev, she had a phone conversation with the U.S. ambassador named Jeffrey Pyatt, and they talked about getting rid of Yanukovych, who would they replace? And they talked about various politicians, and finally they settled on a man named Arseniy Yatsenyuk. And she was quoted, Victoria Nuland, saying, "Yats is the guy. He is the one to be the new president of Ukraine." So with all the rioting going on the streets of Kiev, Yanukovych, he agreed to have an interim government. I believe they're going to move up elections, but he agreed to an interim government. But the opposition says no, and the European Union okayed sanctions. While the violence continued, there were snipers who were shooting at people on the streets. They were also shooting at the government forces, at the police. There's a lot of right away, our media were presenting these snipers as working for the government of Yanukovych, but the truth may be quite a bit different. It's really kind of murky. I believe there's some film that was made by an Italian filmmaker claiming that these snipers were working on the other side. They're working on the side of the people in the streets, although a lot of these people did get, people on the streets were shot, and also along with the police officers. In Odessa, there were supporters of Yanukovych were in a building belonged to some labor federation, and rioters set the building on fire, burning a lot of people to death in the building, and people who tried to jump out of windows were killed by people in the streets. I think about 43 people were killed in this fire in Odessa. And so the violence just got worse and worse. Finally, Yanukovych, he fled the country, went to Russia, and a month later, that is when Joe Biden and his son Hunter entered the scene. So that is sort of this whole setup began, a few years before Biden was there. And Biden came to Ukraine to sort of give an attaboy to Yatsenyuk. And his son, Hunter, got this lucrative position on the board of Burisma Energy Company. And I think he got $50,000 a month. Pretty good pay, $600,000 a year just for sitting on the board. Well, it's pretty clear what there was. One thing going on is that the new rulers of Ukraine were doing this as a way to curry favor with the United States, and it could also be that the United States had its person on the board of this energy company to further its interests. So this is the thing that when the House votes to do this impeachment question against Donald Trump, they may very well ask some of these other questions may come to people's minds. Is it a good, you know, why not, as long as we're investigating the legalities of Trump's phone call to the president of they elected a president recently, and Trump phoned him and sort of hinted that he should investigate the Biden's dealings, and he sort of had to mention this military aid that sort of inferring that it may be withheld if Ukraine didn't do this investigation. But a lot of people might think, well, why not investigate? On the face of it, it seems like a pretty strange situation where, you know, Hunter Biden, who has no qualifications at all, is sitting on the board of this energy company. So these things, this is why I think the tack that the House Democrats are taking may not get very far and may lead to all kinds of embarrassing questions. Where, going back to the two agreements that President Trump just dumped all by himself, has obvious disastrous consequences, are being ignored. Well, to look at the situation, you know, we might even go back a little sooner. We could go back to 1989, as the Soviet Union was dissolving, and the U.S. told Mikhail Gorbachev that if he would agree to Germany reunifying and joining NATO, that the U.S. would not move NATO any further east than the German borders. And so Gorbachev let this happen, and well, what happened was that the U.S. Broke its promise and moved NATO into Eastern Europe, right up to the Russian borders. That was in 1989. In the 1990s, you had the Balkan Wars, where the Yugoslavian arrangement was sort of dissolved into its separate republics, and one of them was Serbia, which is sort of portrayed as a villain of the whole thing. And the U.S. Promoted the breakup of the Yugoslavian Federation, and they also at that time the Kosovo was a province of Serbia, and the U.S. supported its self-determination, its sort of secession from Serbia. Keep that in mind, because this whole secession thing is coming up later. And at the same time, the Soviet Union had dissolved, and Russia was now being run by President Boris Yeltsin. And under his presidency, Western financial interests really looted Russia. That's where all these oligarchs came from. They were people in Russia and Ukraine who were able to get control of state property, which supposedly belongs to the people of the Soviet Union. And these guys gained control of these properties, and they sold them real cheap to these foreign investors, Western investors. And they basically looted Russia. The standard of living went way down under Yeltsin. The life expectancy went down by several years. It was just a horrible time for the Russian people. Pensions that they were counting on just kind of dissolved. But these oligarchs are getting really rich beyond their wildest dreams. And this went on throughout the 90s. In 1996, Boris Yeltsin was up for re-election. And it didn't look very good for him. Well, the U.S. Came in with its media experts, and they put out a big media blitz, and Yeltsin was reelected in 1996. Time magazine did a cover story on this, boasting about it. This is a great thing the U.S. did. Now, you talk about meddling in foreign elections. This was one of the most flagrant examples of all. And so Yeltsin was reelected, and the looting went on for a few more years until year 2000. And I believe his Yeltsin's term was up, or maybe alcoholism had made his health so bad that he had to step down. And so they appointed Vladimir Putin, who was kind of an unknown quantity. He was pretty much no one knew too much about him. He seemed to be a fairly honest guy. And so he stepped into the presidency in the year 2000, and he was able to stop the looting. That is one reason why he is popular in Russia to this day, that he stopped this looting, and he sort of began rebuilding Russia. Well, I think for that, Putin is really very much hated. And the U.S. is trying to do everything it can to get rid of Putin. And they are, in some ways, they are gaining, because when you look at it this way, the looting happened, more than 20 years ago. It began 30 years ago. So the worst decade is something that a lot of young people in Russia today do not remember. They were born after it happened. And so they grew up in a Russia that was always had President Putin in charge, that was kind of rebuilding. And so they didn't have the real feeling of what had happened before. And so there is a lot of, this little people are getting a little tired of Putin. You see him all the time. And Western influence is always there, you might ask Putin's term, I think his term in the presidency expires in the year 2024, if not sooner. And then you have to ask, well, after Putin, what then? What do the Washington Warriors, do they want to pick up where they left off? That's a kind of a question, well, you really can't answer it until it happens. But that kind of sets a scene for what is going on in Russia now, and what this some of the underlying forces behind the impeachment move against Donald Trump. If people want to call in with questions or comments, the number is 503-231-8187. Give us a call. Tell me what you think. You think, do you think Trump should be impeached? If so, what do you think they should impeach him for? I could think of all kinds of crimes that he has done. What do you think about that? How do you feel about the impeachment process against President Donald Trump? Since the people talk a lot about Ukraine, and it's got an interesting history that Ukraine, actually the name means borderlands. Ukraine for a long time was sort of on the border between Russia and the West, and it it was not always part of Russia. At one time, back in the I believe in the 1600s, Ukraine was part of a Polish-Lithuanian empire that covered a lot of what is now Russia. And so the borders of Ukraine have really shifted over the years. It started out in the year, I believe, 1054. It started out as a kind of a pretty small, about maybe one-tenth the size of what it is now, and it has expanded since then. Over the centuries, the borders have changed and shifted, and they are still changing. And I believe we have a caller coming. Ken is on the line. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, good morning. I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
This is fabulous. And the issue seems to me to resolve around the prosecutor that Biden insisted be fired.
Mm-hmm.
I think his name was Shokan or something.
Shokin,
like
yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So what we need to know is, if in fact Shokan was trying to clean up corruption, or whether or not, according to Biden, he wasn't doing a thing. That's theoretically, that's why Biden had him
right.
removed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that seems to me to be one of the critical points about what this is all about.
That's something that should be investigated. Yes.
And you know, you might mention also the. Are you familiar with Browder, the Magnitsky Act?
Oh yes, you know this is very interesting. Bill Browder, he had a hedge fund, I think called Hermitage Investments or something. You know,
right,
I think it was last year. There's a reporter, Lucy Commissar.
Yeah.
Who has written about him? I had her as a guest. I should try
really?
And contact her again. And
yeah.
This guy Browder is a world-class crook. He, but he is sort of somehow he is able to gain the credibility of the U.S. media, and he basically
I think he got Congress to pass the Magnitsky.
That's what it's all about.
Right.
Magnitsky was an accountant. Who, according to Lucy Commissar, helped Browder fleece the Russian government out of a lot of tax money, and he was in prison. He died in prison, not of beatings or anything. He died of natural causes brought about by horrible prison conditions. And he was not a lawyer. He was not a crusader. He was part of the Browder's scamming operation. And so because he died, they put this propaganda thing about him being a whistleblower or whatever and supposedly killed by the Russians. And they passed this sanctions, the Magnitsky Act put sanctions on a whole lot of Russians, which I think that's what that woman lawyer was meeting with the Trump people in the Trump Towers
exactly.
all about.
Yes, exactly.
It's a huge story. It just kind of goes on and on and on. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, well, it's also there are some rumors, and I can email you with them if you're interested, about
mm-hmm.
Biden personally being enriched to a couple $100,000 from Ukraine, from our takeover of the former the former government. But anyway, thanks so much for doing this.
Okay, you're welcome. We have another caller. Boris on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice rounded out scenario spinning that you do. It's great to get the wider background, which is totally absent from most news reporting. Yay, KBOO, and yay, Pear.
Well, I've sort of been digging into Russian history, and the more I read about it, it really is fascinating. But go on.
Well, the one important nugget I think you've omitted is that Putin was head of the KGB strongly for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so that really kind of shades his motives, perhaps, but also the fact that he's really, really intelligent. And so he's a formidable adversary.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Trump in the White House, if you put the two of them in a room, you know, who's going to come up on top? It's not going to be Trump. So,
well, I think Putin is probably smarter than anybody in Washington. You know, whether you like him or not, he's a smart guy, and he's done a lot, his military budget is one-tenth of ours, you know, and the economy is much smaller, but he's been able to rebuild Russia, and, you know, I don't know. What do you know about he was in the KGB, what exactly were his duties? He was stationed in Germany, I believe.
I believe.